Right, Rebecca, the introduction's quickly. I'm Andrew Gibbons, you're Rebecca Norton. And, well, I push this one on you, and it's about leadership and management. It's about giving more value to management in the context I'd like to work through with it than very often is the case, giving more value to management, and particularly the management of leaders and its senior levels, where I think management of those leaders is not always very evident.
I think there's a... Sometimes I think people move up the ranks with an assumption that they automatically learn management skills, and that's not necessarily the case. And unfortunately, that's the downfall, isn't it, sometimes? Although they may be very good at their job originally, it is a different skill set, managing people. You know, and
yeah,
I think that's lacking.
I think so. I was misinterpreting your end there. I thought, oh, you finished, but you hadn't. So don't count that as an interruption. So I was trying hard not to. Yes, and I think it's even more dimensional than that in terms of dimensions, because we started with technical skills, we ditch them, we move into management skills, and then I'm talking about the most senior leaders in an organization. Then we take on a different skill set altogether, which is policy making, strategy, working together collectively as a leadership team, of which I've seen very, very few over the years worth calling a team. So you've got this new situation, which is even more demanding than when you shed the skin of your original technical competencies.
Yeah, and you've got probably pressures from above and pressures from below. So it's managing, you know, expectations from both sides, I think, as well, which is a challenge in itself. And I think it's unfair. I suppose it's doing them a disservice, because if they're not given the proper support, they
absolutely
need to be supported, don't they? I think that's one of the key skills. They have to be supported.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, I could get political here, and we'll try not to, but I think politics provides plentiful evidence. I'll try not to mention names like Dominic Raab, if I can help it. But you know, I think I actually started to feel not sorry for politicians who are shown to be, what's the right words? It's shown not to have the full skill set. That, I guess, is a bit of a cop-out. Politicians and senior leaders of organizations, so their finance directors, if they're chief executives, whatever, are in a very difficult role. It's a hard thing to do. I get that. I've seen this close up. It's a difficult thing to do. They're paid a lot of money to do that difficult thing. They should do it better than they really do. And I think you're right. Part of it is they have not been supported. They've got to develop these skills on the job. I think, all I've got is shouting at people and throwing telephones around like I've seen people do, kicking with furniture because I'm so committed to this. Nobody else around here is. That's all they've got. And if they've not been helped and nurtured to develop a broader range of skills, which they need to get the best from their people in that exposed role, they're found out.
And it's interesting because I think leadership and management are different skills as well. You know, management, you can have someone who's visionary and a really great leader, but not necessarily good at managing people. You know, and I think this is where leadership and management are often sort of pulled together as the same thing, and they're not. And I think that's what causes some of the problems as well.
I think that's absolutely the case. And I've witnessed very firsthand many times at a very senior level in organizations. And you said it earlier, there's this assumption that if you're forceful, confident, alpha type, male or female, by the way, then you typically got it all. Just like that, magically. Well, hey, but what you haven't got is the ability to sit down and look your key people in the eye when you go back to your own real workplace and say, hey, what ideas have you got that are better than mine? Hey, what should I be asking you that I just didn't even think about? I don't hear that going on. So there's that. And I think the way that management comes into it is the management of those senior leaders is often inadequate. It's often missing altogether. Management to me of leaders would mean things like monitoring, setting performance standards. Yes, we're told this happens, but does it really? Do directors and most senior managers in organizations truly get development plans and are supported in that? I'm not just talking about go and get an MBA, go and get this. I'm talking about specifically and contextually what people need to do to get better at their jobs and then help to do so.
But do you think this is part of the problem, that is if you're in a management position or a leadership position, you are assumed to have skills, and therefore by saying I need help and I need to upskill, are you sort of showing signs that perhaps you're not as good as what people thought you were? You know, this is where it gets a bit tricky, isn't it?
It does. It really does. And that's why, once again, I'll say this is where management with a capital M in big neon letters says, hey, this is important, because the management of that process by, if you like, the one singular most important person, best paid person, let's put it that way, of such people. The management by them of the others is so important. I don't think it happens strongly enough and most sufficiently clearly enough, because you're right. That person recognizes that each of them have got egos, they've got a projection of competence to make. And I've worked with board directors that have come out of board meetings and said, oh, I'll tell you what, I won't tell any of them. I understood about 4% of what went on in there. But if I told them that, I think they'd think I can't do my job.
Yeah, and that's worrying though, isn't it? They should, and in some respects, if you flip that round, and if managers and leaders were vulnerable enough to say, I do need some help, yeah, I recognize that I have room to grow and develop, what a wonderful example that would be to the rest of their team underneath them and around them.
Well, you would say that, and I would say that. In actual reality, a lot of people would say, well, hey, Andrew Gibbons and Rebecca and Norton just said they're not perfect. Let's get in there. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm thinking to myself, I know everything that's going on in here. If you don't, well, I'm sorry, I still think. Because unfortunately, they live in that political sharp knife environment, or believe they do. And once again, it's the role of their manager to say, hang on a minute, round here, we're okay about saying we don't know everything. Round here, and I hope I model this too, says the manager of such people, it's okay to say you need a bit of help. I don't hear those words around a boardroom very often.
No, and I think this is where ego comes in, isn't it, as well, unfortunately. I think people who get into management positions or leadership positions often have slightly bigger egos, and sometimes that moving up the ladder goes to their head a little bit, and perhaps they're not as open to suggestions and ideas as they could be.
I really believe, and I think this is really important, because if this is happening, as I believe it does, at the very, very top of organizations, that has an impact on the effectiveness of those organizations in two ways. First of all, the performance impact, you just don't get as much from those people. Also, we keep hearing the word culture. To me, the best definition of that was always the way things are done around here. And if the way things are done around here is people pretend they know things they don't, cover up their weaknesses and bully and shout and scream at people instead of saying, hey, you know more about this than I do. You've been here 3 times, 8 times longer than I have. Tell me what you know. Such leaders get better results.
Yeah. And like you say, I would also argue that it's probably a more responsible organisation as well. This is how things can get covered up and mistakes can happen, because there's a culture where it's not safe to say, oh, I don't know what I'm doing, you know, and that's not good.
Well, I don't want to get specific, but I could pull out some past examples of headlines around, for instance, the health industry, hospitals, where people's incompetence and lack of competence, that's not judgment of people. That's about saying, we once can come down to it, the people who employ me and my manager isn't sufficiently helping me develop the skills. Now, all right, some people would say, don't help me, I don't want to be helped, I don't want to learn. Well, there's a different way to manage those people.
Yeah.
But to me, we are talking about valuing the management of leaders. And that isn't a bit of a weird intertwined thing. It's great to be a leader. It's great to have vision, like you say. It's great to have forceful personalities and to have drive and determination. The management of all of that requires somebody else to say, hey, I've been watching you, and you're getting a little bit too close to not treating your people with dignity and respect.
And do you think it's perhaps because you get further up the tree, the less you've got above you, and, you know, at some point you get to the top of the tree. So who then keeps a check on you, you know, and is this where there's a role for a bit of peer support as well?
In the right circumstances, because the wrong situation would be, hey, peers, what do you think? Well, we all think you're useless. Where have you gone by now? So I think being realistic and being pragmatic in reality, because let's not use those words less often than we should. In reality, this doesn't happen. And people get by, and people are thought to be good enough. And yet I keep coming back to that wonderful phrase that Sir Alan Shepherd used when he became chairman of Grand Metropolitan. He said, no, I'm managing director, I will not accept acceptable underperformance. I think you see so much acceptable underperformance, people being good enough, but not as good as they could be. And the difference between that at the highest level can be very significant.
So how do we help these managers then?
Oh, no. Oh, the difficult question you've been sitting on. Keeping out of their way, just letting them self-destruct. Yeah, genuinely, I think most of these people in that situation are beyond help. I hate to say it, because I'd love to be able to think I'm so proficient, and so are many in my profession of helping us to learn, that these people get turned around. I think a lot of these people have got so far and have been rewarded by status, role, remuneration, type of office, car, whatever, all the indications that say you are really good. And if I've got so good with what I've got, I'll just carry on doing what I do. I don't feel the need to change. No one's going to tell me I need to be a different person, because look where I am. And it's very hard to break out of that for people. They've got to really feel a need. I don't think that need can be created easily. And once again, I come back to the management of those people. It's only the people to whom those such people report that has the authority to say, hold on, Andrew, you know you're good, you know you're great. You could be so much better if you do this. And listen to me, don't interrupt me, because I'm your boss and I'm telling you what to do here. You need a forceful manager of leaders to get the best out of them.
What one thing do you think would be most helpful? Because, yeah, I mean, there's so many different areas that a manager has to be good at, really. But what one thing do you think is key that would make the biggest difference?
Okay. All right. Thanks again for your well prepared questions. I guess the one thing would be to recognize that you don't row the boat on your own. To recognize that the higher up an organization you go, the more dependent you are on the very capable people very often that surround you, that have been there longer than you, that know more than you about a lot of things. I don't like it when I hear people at any level say, I wouldn't give people anything to do, I wouldn't do myself. So that's limiting, because what we can do ourselves is that. There's so much else that we can't do that we're kind of saying, and I wouldn't give this to somebody because I can't do that. Well, yes. It's about having humility to say, there are people around me, and I'm very proud to say this, that know an awful lot more about this and could do things I can't around here, which is the opposite of what most people that work 15 hours a day and think they're irreplaceable think.
I like that. I think that's a really sort of interesting thought, and like you say, often counter thought of what we would have about that is the higher up I go, the less I depend on people. Actually, the more you depend on people. That's a really good point.
Well, I know we're getting towards the end of this. I can tell by your tone, I'm getting quite intuitive about this. I think Hewlett Packard used to have, I hope they still do, a philosophy of when people work too many hours, as they saw it, you need to get someone in and say, why are you working so many hours? What are we doing that's wrong? Why are we loading you up? What can we do to help you work less hours? Because we're not helping you by causing you to feel you need to work in this way. Well-being.
That's a great idea. Wouldn't it be wonderful if some more organisations did that?
Don't they? They all talk about well-being. You're the well-being expert. It's the first thing we ever did together, wouldn't it? Because I didn't. But surely well-being is partly about saying we're concerned about the hours you're putting in and what it's doing to you.
Food for thought for another topic, I reckon, that. But I like that, yeah.
All right, we'll stop it there because we can prolong this too much else. Thanks as ever.
Thank you.